You might think it's easy to spot trouble, but the best way to do it is to come to the right place. And that's where you are, the baddest biker bar in the investment world. This is the Danger Zone. Welcome to the Danger Zone on Money Life. It's where we get the latest take from the experts at New Construct, where they evaluate securities on a scale of most attractive to most dangerous. They do it bringing together discounted cash flow analysis and forensic accounting, digging in at the footnotes level, working their way up, and they find sometimes that the picture is misleading. If it's misleading and it works in your favor, well, that would make something attractive. The ones we tend to focus on here are the ones that are misleading and working against you, which makes them dangerous. David Trainer is founder and president at New Constructs. He rejoins me now. David, great to chat with you again.
Chuck, it's great to be with you.
Before we get to your danger zone pick this week, I want to talk about a situation that has been ongoing with the danger zone, which is the quality and craftsmanship of your crystal ball repairman. Because you routinely tell us your crystal ball is in the shop. And I'm not actually asking you to make crystal ball forecasts, but you are looking at data telling us, here's what I think is wrong with a company. And at some point, the market will figure it out. And when I say, what's the catalyst? That's when you say, crystal ball is just not giving me a reading. But the interesting thing in these crazy market times is that everybody's crystal ball is about to get murkier. We've got companies that are saying, we're not going to issue earnings guidance because there's so much uncertainty with what's going on with tariffs and the rest. We don't want to create an unclear picture. We clearly, therefore, will have more companies that miss or have unusual earnings. And you are almost always saying, if I had to guess, it would be an earnings miss that wakes the market up. Are we about to wake up and find that a whole bunch of stocks that have been supported by this market, you know, now's going to be the time? Or is it going to be, you know, the crystal ball's still murky because, yeah, they couldn't give good earnings guidance when amid all this?
Chuck, while I'll never claim to be a magician, I would say that my crystal ball is out of the shop the last few weeks. Just because our stock picks have been tremendous. A lot of the long ideas that we've been writing about here recently are up for the year, while most stocks are down really strongly. The Bloomberg indices, based on our proprietary research, are outperforming like crazy. And a lot of our danger zone picks are really coming home to roost. You know, what I would say is that, you know, the crystal ball really struggles because my crystal ball is a particular version of a crystal ball. It's the fundamentals. And we happen to have a better sense of fundamentals, materially better sense of fundamentals, as evidenced by the live traded performance of our Bloomberg indices, I think, just this year. You know, when fundamentals don't matter, it's really difficult for there to be any kind of sense of what's going to happen for stocks. Because, look, if it's based on sentiment, I mean, that moves on the wind, right? Momentum, that can go up and down based on the whims of a roaring kitty or the Reddit crowd, right? Those are investment strategies that I've always warned people against because they're not based on, you know, to use a biblical phrase, they're not built on solid ground. They're not built on rock. They're built on sand. They're castles in the sky, a million different analogies. So we've always felt, you know, listen, real investment strategies should be based on really hard things that you can measure, math, fundamentals. And sometimes it's hard to get to the truth about fundamentals, but when you do, it's worth it. The long-term performance of our danger zone picks is very strong. Is it sexy when markets are booming? No. But overall, they've done great. Most attractive stocks have done great. It's a longer-term, more patient strategy in a world where people just aren't patient anymore. But guess what? This sort of what I would call artificially induced sense of stability and prosperity that has been backstopped with inordinate amounts of support from the Fed and the federal government in terms of liquidity, suddenly stopping. And we've got a political regime that's saying, whoa, 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 whoa. We need to potentially change the landscape on a lot of different levels. And this is not a political speech at all. I'm just saying, look, in this kind of market, fundamentals are mattering. It's a big deal. And so the crystal ball is coming out of the shop. The crystal ball has been working. And I think that's very healthy. I kind of see what's going on is, look, we have been, you know, the Fed with its liquidity is sort of like a giant fireman who's been running around the markets all around the world, by the way, right? Like every time we've seen a currency crisis in a certain country, what have they done? They've opened up a specific special line of credit directly to the U.S. Fed to backstop that, right? And so they've been pouring water on every little forest fire that ever comes out. Fix it. You know, what are they doing to fix it? Backstopping our allies financially, backstopping them militarily. We can't afford to do it anymore. If we keep doing it, this borrow and spend thing, we all know it's going to blow up. We've seen our debt, like we've all done the math. We've heard about the math. It's unsustainable. Problem with that is the longer you put off the little forest fires that are doing real work to clean up dysfunction in markets, you're just inevitably setting yourself up for a major forest fire like what we saw in LA. So I think it's important that we let these processes run their course. We let these stocks correct. We let this capital reallocate to better places. And that's part of what's happening. And that's a very good thing for my crystal ball.
And it does not matter to you what causes the correction. That's the other side of this that I wanted to get at, because when we're asking for what's a catalyst, you may not know what it's going to be, but it doesn't really matter as long as it does correct, right?
You know, you bring up, that's a great way to put it, Chuck. And I really appreciate you paying as much attention to what I'm saying, because you're thinking about it even smarter than I am. You're right. Right. That's part of why I said the crystal ball's in the shop, because I didn't know what was going to bring the liquidity or the uncertainty crisis to bear in a way that, you know, you put handcuffs on the Fed and our government or the fiscal monetary policy authorities to prevent them from handcuffing the invisible hands. And I didn't know what could do that. I couldn't predict if or when that would happen. And quite frankly, I wasn't too confident, because I think from a political standpoint, it's suicide. It's suicide. And I think Ray Dalio has done a lot of great work pointing out that this is a very natural thing in successful societies, that there's an enormous amount of prosperity. And then people start to bet on that prosperity continuing. They borrow money to bet on it, and they become super powerful because they become super rich. They influence the authorities to ensure that stability, to make sure those bets keep working. And they go on and on and on until things blow up. And we've seen that time and time again through civilization. And that's for sure what's happening here. We see it all over the place. Borrow and spend. Everybody's super indebted. You know, even if you got three houses, you got mortgage, you know, that's there to fund that. And you know, credit card debt is super high. You've got 3x leveraged ETFs, and just everyone thinks it's, how about the secondary school and college education market, right? Like, I mean, you don't even pay attention to the price because you can just borrow it, which is why the prices keep going up, because really nobody cares. That's not healthy. That's just not healthy and not sustainable. So I think it's good for that to stop. And again, yes, I kind of don't care where it comes from. I'm just happy for it, because I think ultimately, honestly, for my children, for my grandchildren, like, we can't just pretend that we can spend and forget it.
Well, now let's get to what is this week's danger zone pick, because I know you have an interesting one. Who is in the danger zone this week?
Chuck, I'm very happy to bring back one of the OG of danger zone stocks. That's been the one of the ones we've been the most wrong about. That's dropped about 50% in the last year or so. You know, we came in and talked about a lot, and we were wrong because the crystal ball is broken because nobody cared about fundamentals. But guess what? The chickens have come home to roost for Tesla, and we're putting it back in the danger zone.
Danger, danger.
Okay, so Tesla back in the danger zone. And here is the thing for anybody who has heard David. David has had Tesla in the danger zone for years, literal years. It has been the anti-danger zone pick, in that if you ever wanted to bet against David, it would have been the stock probably to do it with. And yet for you, all of this has been building. So I've got to ask, we're not here talking politics, but how much of this pick is, this is what I've seen for years coming to roost? How much of this is, this could not have been foreseen? What Elon Musk is doing is having a bad impact on the company, and it's the new stuff and the political stuff that is bringing this on the company? Or is it the old stuff finally happening?
It's a little bit of both, but mostly it's the old stuff that we've been predicting for years and years and years happening to such a severe degree that people just can't gloss over it. And I think the fact that Musk is distracted is undermining his ability to say, I'm the magic man. Don't worry about these things. Don't worry about market share losses. Don't worry about the fact that we are no longer a growth story. Revenues are going down. And we're just not that we're not growing fast enough. Revenues are going down. We are losing market share. Margins are going down. It is on the backside of the mountain that we predicted would happen when competitors moved into the market. The first mover advantage wouldn't last forever. We've always predicted that. It's happening. It's happening in spades. And the fact that Musk, I think, is doing these other things has precluded him from being able to have enough credibility to come back and say, oh, I'm going to fix it all. We're going to invent a robot. We're going to invent rockets to the moon, whatever it is he's saying. People just aren't buying it as much, especially as the stats just continue to roll in with respect to market share, margins, batteries, all the promises he's made, robotaxi. You know, the people are just starting to, you know, in as much as his crystal ball was working because he could just keep making stuff up and people would believe it, you know, his crystal ball is not working as much anymore.
So Tesla is a stock that has been hammered this year. It is down, if I'm going to just use round numbers, it's been down about 40%, maybe a little bit more than that. It's off a little bit more than 50% now as we record this from its 52-week high. It hasn't been punished enough. What's a real valuation supposed to be on this stock?
Chuck, you know, we've always been, you know, under $100, even under $50. And we maintain that, you know, the real price for this stock is closer to $45-$50 a share than it is at $255.
In terms of assessing that value, does the political stuff actually have anything to do with it? Like, is the fact that we keep seeing Teslas be in the news because people are so unhappy with him, they're, you know, keying the cars and doing all this stuff that no one should be doing to anybody. Come on, folks. But, you know, there's all the outrage, if you will, from the people who disagree with his politics. I don't know that they were Tesla customers before, but does that contribute to it? Like, does that factor in at all when you're trying to do a real valuation?
No, I think it has the opposite effect. It doesn't factor into it at all. And I would say it probably helps Tesla and Musk more than it hurts, because he's always kind of been like, oh, the haters don't like us because of, you know, we're visionary, blah, blah, blah. And these people are crazy. And I think it only probably strengthens the support for the brand and for what he does more than it hurts it. I don't know that. I think probably the issue is overblown, and he's overblowing it on purpose because he can on Twitter, and it's not that big a deal. And ultimately it's inconsequential. So let me put into context part of why, you know, this target price is where it is. Let me first explain to you what the current stock price implies, so you would get a sense of just how overvalued it is. To justify $255 a share, the company's got to improve its margins to 1.5 Toyota's margins, which has been continually or consistently the most profitable, largest car company in the world for a long time. And by the way, that 15%, that margin has to go to 15%. So it's 1.5 Toyota's margin and 3x Tesla's current margin, and then grow revenue by 33% compounded annually for the next 8 years. In that scenario, Tesla would be generating $1.2 trillion in revenue, 2033. That's 1.2 times the combined revenue of Toyota, General Motors, Nissan, Ford, Honda, and Stellantis. 120% of its competitors. All right. That would also imply they would be selling 19 million vehicles, or 35% of the expected market for electric vehicles in 2033.
Highly unlikely given how much focus competitors are having on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Toyota, the biggest and the best for a long time, they're at 11% right now. They've been steadily at 10 or 11% for many years of the global automobile market. So Tesla's market share, for context, Chuck, has been moving in the wrong direction. For example, Tesla's market share in China has recently dropped to as low as 6% in 2024. BYD moving up to 32%. So sort of flip-flopping. Tesla, by the way, is third in China, not even second. In Europe, they saw their sales decline 45% for the first 2 months of the year, despite EV sales in the region rising 37% over the same time. So their market share in Europe fell from 21% in the first quarter of 2023 to 9% in the first quarter of 2025.
And they are a company that's not going to be immune to tariffs. You haven't even really factored any of that into your analysis, have you?
No. I don't have to, right? I'm not going to have to make an argument on something that's unsure and unstable. The numbers here are so strong, and as they have been for years, right? And a big part of our report goes through all the different sort of business segments and different things that they sort of promised that would mean they didn't have to be a car company. I mean, you remember a few years ago, it was like, oh, they're going to be an insurance company. Scrap that, right? A battery company. By the way, Tesla never no longer has a range advantage. Their batteries are second, third tier. They're full self-driving. Third, fourth, fifth tier has been for a long time. And by the way, that 19 million vehicles that I mentioned are 35% of the global EV market. That's based on an average selling price of $50,000 a car, which is pretty high.
Yeah, especially if the market's going to go through what the market's going through.
Yes, nobody that has that kind of market share has an average selling price anywhere close to that, right? So if you put the average selling price closer to where Toyota is, the biggest and largest, we're at 32 million vehicles implied. That's 59% of the market.
And that's how you come up with a valuation that you think Tesla is really worth of somewhere closer to $50 a share, an 80% haircut from where we are now. It's Tesla, TSLA, back in the danger zone. Yeah, it has not been the successful danger zone pick, but David has restated several times over the years that eventually the trouble was going to come home. Maybe this is the time. David Trainer, great stuff. Thanks as always for joining me.
My pleasure, Chuck. I had a blast as always.
David Trainer is founder and president at New Constructs. If you want to learn more about how they create their most attractive and most dangerous stocks list, learn more about their methods, go to newconstructs.com. Up next on Money Life, Jeff Weniger will be here. We are talking with him. He is with Wisdom Tree Asset Management. It's the big interview when Money Life returns in just a moment.